The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lee Normoudou, and welcome to Health Chat. When people compete in sports, they try their physical best to be the best. But sometimes there are those who use a little boost illegally to perform better. Sports doping is the use of banned performance-enhancing drugs. It is considered unethical by most international sports organizations, including the International Olympic Committee. And with the upcoming World Cup starting this week, we will discuss sports doping on the program today. How is it detected? What are some of the substances used? And how common is it in football and in Africa as well? Just some of the questions that we will discuss today, and to help us do that, we are joined here in the studio by Sunny Young, VOA's sports reporter. Hello, Sunny.
Sporty greetings, Lenore.
Sporty greetings to you, Sunny. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here, Lenore, and I'm excited about the World Cup in Brazil.
I'm sure you are. We are all excited, putting on our jerseys and everything. So, yes. All right. And also joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is Rodney Swigler. He's the director of WADA's Africa Regional Office. WADA is the World Anti-Doping Agency. Mr. Swigler, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, Lenore, and good evening to the listeners.
And it's so good for you to join us from Cape Town. And we will talk more about sports doping today. But first, let's listen to this soundbite by Don Catlin, who is a former member of the Olympics. He's based in London, and he talks about medically supervised doping, a subject he says he has thought about for many, many years. Take a listen.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this over the years. Every time I try to convince myself that maybe we could do it, I turn away from that. There's so many difficulties, really impossible to control. And even if you wanted to try it, then all the athletes would be able to take drugs. It would be a battle of pharmacologists, I guess, and there would be all kinds of problems in that sort of battle. But worst of all, there'd be a new equilibrium where all athletes are on drugs, and their times are a little bit shorter, they get a little bit faster, a little bit better, but they're all equal again. And that doesn't really help them. We have to keep fighting to control the drugs right at the front.
And Mr. Swigler, you heard this soundbite. Can you give us your reaction? First of all, can you enlighten us on doping? We know that it's the use of performance-enhancing drugs. That's what we hear. But what is it exactly? What type of drugs are we talking about?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, Don is a well-respected anti-doping crusader, so I completely agree with him that it's something that we cannot allow in sport, not just for the ethical issues surrounding doping and cheating in sport, but generally also the health effects of what doping represents. We know about systematic doping in the past. We know what it did to the health of those athletes from those countries. And we need to avoid the youngsters trying to build up their physiques through taking shortcuts. So it's more than just a sporting issue. It's also a health issue. And therefore, we need governments around the world to assist us in this regard. Doping, as you've mentioned, is, of course, the taking of the banned substances, but there are also methods involved. So it's not just taking of a substance, but also certain methods that is prohibited in sport. And the World Anti-Doping Agency that was created in 1999 is the custodian of the World Anti-Doping Code and the international standards. And one of those standards is the standard for the list of banned substances and methods. It's a list that we develop every year and we update it regularly. It comes into effect on the 1st of January every year, and that is the list that athletes need to know exists and make sure that they understand their roles and responsibilities in as elite athletes, or not just elite athletes, but as athletes in general.
Very interesting point there, Mr. Swigert. And Sonny, let me come to you. We know this is something that exists in sports, unfortunately, and you as a sport reporter, you've come across some cases that have been in the news. Can you give us a sense of a couple of perhaps cases that were really, really had in the news that make big news?
Well, from my perspective, Lenore, the modern era of doping began at the 1988 Seoul Olympics, 26 years ago, which coincidentally was when the Voice of America hired me. I came in here just before the Seoul Games, okay, which were marked by the first major doping case involving Canadian sprinter Ben Johnson. He tested positive for steroids at those Seoul Games. He was stripped of his gold medal. And in the ensuing quarter century since Johnson's disgrace, you might say, we've had it's become much more publicized. Most recently, we've had Lance Armstrong,
yes,
the cycling star, being stripped of all of his Tour de France cycling titles. He was found guilty of doping. Uh-huh. And it's also become, I think the various sporting bodies have become much more aware of the problem. Major League Baseball, okay, which encompasses clubs in both the United States and Canada, they went through a period during the 1980s and 1990s where a lot of players were using steroids, and as a result, you had a spike in records being set, especially power-hitting records like,
yes,
home runs.
Yes.
Barry Bonds broke Hank Aaron's record. He was swept up in doping. So baseball has become much more aware of it. I think you see it a lot in athletics, in,
yeah,
track and field. But with the World Cup coming up in Brazil, it kicks off on Thursday in Sao Paulo. I don't think you see, you don't hear about cases as often,
yes,
involving top players. I was doing some research. Really, one of the major players who was kind of caught up in a scandal was Maradona from Argentina. During the 1994 World Cup here in the United States, he tested positive for a stimulant, ephedrine. And he was sent home from the cup.
Yes.
So he was a big name, but otherwise,
it doesn't seem to be very common.
It's not widespread.
Yes.
In international football.
And Mr. Swigert, perhaps you can enlighten us better in this. As Sonny reported, that it doesn't seem to be very common, and I have not heard very much about doping in soccer. You in Africa, we know how soccer is important in the African culture. What can you tell us about the practice of doping in that specific type of sport?
Well, yeah. I mean, Africa is a sports loving continent, and obviously soccer, football is the number one sport, and we wish Nigeria, Ghana, Algeria, Cameroon, and Cote d'Ivoire everything of the best as they go out there to represent our continent. I think from an African perspective, the most common drug or substance that have been abused in the past is marijuana, but that has changed significantly, and we also find other substances coming through. I think what is important is that we need to understand that there's no sport, and for that matter, there is no country that's immune to doping. And even if we don't have huge anti-doping rule violations that come out, even if we don't have a lot of athletes that get suspended, that we need to be vigilant, and we need to ensure that athletes are educated continuously. And sensitized, of course, to their roles and responsibilities. In Africa, the Confederation of African Football, for example, in 2012, have conducted about 229 samples. These are basically in-competition samples. It would be interesting to see what happens if they test outside of competitions when athletes least expect testing to take place. my apologies, you know, I have a bit of a cold.
Yes, I know that.
And out of those 229 samples, there were about 0.7% adverse analytical findings, which is not the same as a guilty verdict. It's just that there was something picked up in samples and so on. I think also from an African perspective, we need to understand that Africa, we don't have a long tradition in anti-doping. We don't have sophisticated anti-doping agencies in existence. There are a couple of countries with those systems. South Africa is one. There are countries like Egypt that's coming up, Mauritius, Seychelles. They have small agencies that does the testing. And we are now in the process of building that capacity in the region. Unlike in Europe, where I've said almost all of the countries have a dedicated agency, well-resourced agency that can do a vast number of tests annually and ensure that they monitor the athletes in this regard. We don't have that luxury here. We rely currently on the goodwill of the countries. Okay. As WADA, we have put in a number of tests from our own budget that we do, because we realize that with the conflicting priorities many African countries sit with, anti-doping is one of the last items on the agenda when they discuss budgets at the beginning of every year. And that is a concern, I think. We also have I'm sorry.
And we will come back to that. You're making a very, very interesting point, and we are going to come back and discuss further. Let me get your take on this, Sonny. Mr. Swigoro mentioned the fact that some people they come across marijuana as one of the substances that have been used. Have you had any cases in your reporting of an athlete that maybe were accused of using marijuana or anything else besides what you told us?
Well, in terms of football or soccer, mm-hmm. FIFA says the two most common drugs that it has spotted over the years have been marijuana and cocaine. Okay. And, you know, whether, you know, I can't speak on whether they're being used for performance
yes.
purposes or recreational drug
exactly.
use.
Because that's one of the things that I was, when Mr. Swigler mentioned it, I was thinking, I said, people use marijuana for recreational purposes. So to what extent that is this considered to be doping if you were doing it for having fun and then you have to go to a game and it is detected in your blood? Mr. Swigola, did you want to react to that?
Well, I think there is a realization that obviously the verdict is still out, or the jury is still out on whether or not it is performance enhancing, but certainly it is against the spirit of sport. I'm sorry, and it carries a health risk with it. But as I've also indicated, we are detecting others coming through as well. From a WADA perspective, we are certainly wary of the use and abuse of marijuana, both for whatever reason and recreational purposes. In fact, for that matter, last year the board decided to our executive committee decided to push the threshold up for marijuana in the system so that it's easier to differentiate between those inhaled or that used for recreational purposes. And of course, marijuana is on the out of competition list. And it's just detected, in competition, I'm very sorry. So therefore, it's a specific process is followed in analyzing for that.
Very interesting. Now, did you want to say something, Sonny?
Yeah, I actually had a question for Rodney in South Africa. From the WADA perspective, as we look forward to the World Cup, there will be testing of players in Brazil, drug testing of players, more than 700 getting ready to compete. And one report I read is that there's no international standard drug testing laboratory in Brazil, that WADA withdrew its accreditation for the facility in Rio de Janeiro. Can you comment at all on that?
Yeah, of course. WADA is the body that accredits laboratories for anti-doping analysis. The laboratory, for various reasons, have WADA revoked that accreditation, and for the FIFA World Cup, FIFA is of course going to do the analysis for that, and we have seen reports that they have decided to send the samples to one of the other labs, and that's perfectly fine. It's a pity because it would have been good to have the laboratory right there. Quick turnaround time and so on, but I don't think it will really affect the testing program at the FIFA World Cup adversely.
Okay, and we are going to take a short break. Mr. Swigler, don't go away. We will continue the discussion after a short break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic is sports doping, so doping in sports. Joining us in the studio is VOA's own reporter, a sports reporter, Sonny Young, and on the phone in Cape Town, South Africa, is Mr. Rodney Swigler. He's director of WADA's Africa Regional Office. And if you would like to ask your question, you can do so by calling 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us your questions at healthchat@voanews.com. And I do have a question here that was posted on facebook.com/voahealthchat, and it's by Jillian in Ghana. And she wants to know, are there more cases of doping for male or female athletes, Mr. Swigler?
that's a tough one. I don't have those stats in front of me.
Okay.
But I think doping doesn't ask for any gender. I think we have enough cases of female athletes besides the male ones that Sonny has already highlighted. I can think quickly of Marianne Jones. And again, I wanted to highlight in that regard another issue, which I think is also pertinent, that doping and the way in which we detect it is, of course, a scientific process. But we have also realized that we need to get other mechanisms and other means to also get to the cheats. And therefore, investigations have become very important, meaning non-analytical. It's through information that's provided and follow-up by relevant investigative agencies in countries. And that is why people like Marianne Jones and Lance Armstrong as well. It wasn't because they tested positive in the laboratory, but because of investigations, and that is why I refer to the World Anti-Doping Code, the document that standardizes and harmonizes all aspects related to anti-doping. In November last year, South Africa, and for that matter, Africa, hosted the biggest anti-doping gathering, which was the 2013 World Conference on Doping in Sport, where we reviewed this code and where a new revised version was unanimously accepted. And this code will come into effect on the 1st of January. Mm-hmm. 2015, and in this new code, it makes very strong recommendations and on the role that investigations can play in getting to the cheats. So that is another weapon in our armory, and we think that is going to assist our fight tremendously. But back to the question from Ghana, I think that it's not just men. Obviously, there are women as well. I just don't have the stats in front of me.
And Sonny, in the news, what have you seen more in terms of the controversy around equally men and female? Or
well, that is actually a good question. I mean, I think most of the cases, at least here in the United States, have, been, although Rodney did mention Marion Jones, have been male athletes.
At least in terms of what was reported.
Exactly.
We don't know.
Exactly. Yes. And as Rodney pointed out, you know, Armstrong never tested positive.
Yes.
It was as a result of an investigation that they did that they found out. Exactly.
If there was no investigation, we wouldn't have known.
That's right. That's right.
And this leads me to this question, Mr. Swigert. The WADA was established in 1999, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Before that, how do we know that athletes and were not doping? What type of measures were put in place before to really know that each and every athlete were performing to their full capacity naturally?
Well, that's the questions we all have, and that was part of the reason why the International Olympic Committee in 1999, after the famous Ben Johnson scandal that Sunny highlighted already, and another case in cycling with the Festina affair at the Tour de France, brought into shop question the issue of how coordinated is this fight? Do we know what happened? We have documented cases of what happened at previous Olympic Games, that's prior to the 1990 Sydney Games, when there was no WADA, no coordinated effort. What happened in the former Soviet Union and in other countries in that part of the world where there was systematic doping. What happened before WADA was created is that it was sort of everybody just did their own thing. The IAAF had their own program. The IOC had their own program. Some of the other federations had their own program. Some countries' governments had legislation in place to curb this thing. But there was nothing global. It wasn't coordinated at a global level. And people realized that, look, sport happens all over the world. Athletes travel. We are there for the clean athlete. Mm-hmm. We need to protect their interests and ensure that there's a level playing field. And therefore, it was necessary to bring all sports bodies and all governments together to sit around one table and to say, look, this is a problem that affects all of us, and we need to work together. There are obviously a lot of things that happened, and these things are still surfacing now, things we weren't aware of that happened in the 80s and 70s. And even before that, we know about athletes that died. We know about athletes that physically and health-wise, they were badly affected by whatever happened back then. Now, at least, we know that anti-doping is global and that all countries must follow the same protocols.
Yes.
We have standards for how athletes are tested, so that an athlete in the U.S. and an athlete in Ghana or in Nigeria or in Kenya are all tested the same way. It goes to laboratories that are accredited and all follow the international standard for laboratories. So in a sense, you know, we have tightened up the net, and we have made significant progress simply because of this partnership between sport and government.
So tell us about what is on the ground in Africa. How available is it? How many of these laboratories have been implemented for testing?
Yeah, worldwide, I mean, we have around 4 laboratories. We don't have a lot of them, but it's simply because of quality and so on. In Africa, we used to have 2, but the laboratory in Tunisia also lost its accreditation. And so currently there's only 1 laboratory in Bloemfontein. I should also highlight to the listeners that it's not easy getting a laboratory. It's an elaborate process, and it's a costly exercise to get one of these laboratories and to maintain it. And therefore, we have realized the need that perhaps in Africa we need another 1 or 2 laboratories in North and West Africa, where there are currently no laboratories in place. But I think we should also be realistic in saying that if they don't have samples to analyze, then why have a laboratory? And that is why we are very clear that if you want to have a laboratory, you need to have a robust anti-doping program on the ground. You need to have one in place. In other words, you need to take enough samples that you can analyze at these laboratories. You need to have regional cooperation to ensure that those people also send their samples to your laboratory, because just to maintain it on an annual basis, you need to analyze about 3,000 samples at these at the laboratory.
Okay.
So we have realized that there is a need for another one, and we are working currently with. We are working with Egypt that have shown interest. There are also others in West Africa with whom we are working with. But it's not our decision on where a laboratory should be. It is the decision of the national authorities and their commitment to anti-doping and whether or not they have the resources to do so.
You just answered my next question, so that's good. And Sunny, when we look at the landscape today and some of the athletes that have been found guilty of doping, what has happened to many of them? Did they continue in performing some type of sports, or did they change careers? What type of impact have you seen with some of these athletes?
Well, I'll just use Lance Armstrong as an example. He talked about maybe going into marathon running. He ran the New York City Marathon after his cycling career ended. But I think, as Rodney mentioned, the health risks associated with doping, and it's a sport that I really don't cover, professional wrestling. There have been a slew of early deaths from these participants who took a lot of steroids, to build muscle mass. But as a result, many of these wrestlers died in their, I shouldn't say many, but it was a high number that died in their early 50s, some even younger than 50. And they attribute that to the steroid use.
That's very, very unfortunate. And we have a question from Chukwu. He writes to us from Nigeria. He says, it looks like South Africa is a country commonly found with cases of doping in sports. Is there a reason for this? He doesn't give any examples or statistics. And I don't know where he gets his information, but Mr. Swigler, I will leave it to you to answer this question.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a very good question, and then one that I'm confronted with all the time, and I think it's a very good lesson for Nigeria. Is it true? If you realize that it comes from South Africa, the difference between South Africa and some of the other countries is that South Africa has a robust anti-doping agency in place. Their sole purpose is to test athletes, to do education. They do more than 2,000 samples a year. So it is highly likely that most of the positives that we hear about in Africa comes from South Africa, because this is where athletes are tested very frequently, very often, and in huge numbers. Nigeria also had their... they also have their positive cases, and we know what happened with their weightlifting federation a couple of years back because of cases. And Nigeria is certainly a key country where we are hoping that the authorities will create such an agency, purely looking at the number of athletes they have competing internationally, the impact of Nigerian athletes on global sport. And I think also if you look at the most populous country in Africa, obviously, they will then have a huge sporting fraternity, and therefore it just makes sense that they invest in this situation, that they invest in an agency that can perform enough tests so that,
Okay. So I guess what we are going to end the show very quickly, but what I get from this is sports doping seem to exist in some cases. Perhaps sometimes it's because we cannot detect it that we don't report it or we don't talk about it, right? And Mr. Swigler, thank you so much for joining us from South Africa today. We appreciate your time. Sunny Young, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lenore, for inviting me.
And we thank both our guests today. If you'd like more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com or join us on facebook.com, VOA Health Chat. And let's keep the conversation going. Just look for Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.